This is the final session on this summer school, and I'm happy to introduce Darren Poynton, who is going to talk about Marxism and the Social Republic, Marx and Kautsky on the democratic transformation of the state. Over to you, Darren.
Okay, well, thanks for coming, everyone. So I'm going to be talking about the idea of the Social Republic and how this is a central idea to Marxism. And I'm going to be showing how this idea is shared in the works of both Marx and Kautsky. I will, for those that don't know, I will say a bit about who Kautsky is as the talk progresses. So this is going to be the thread of my argument I'm going to put forward today. Is so the Social Republic was a central theme in the thought of both Marx and Kautsky, and the realization of a social republic should be at the center of any realistic version of socialist politics. So I'm going to explain what is meant by the social republic as we go along, and also what I mean by realistic. So if we hold this quote from the critique of the Gotha program, if we hold this in our heads as I'm talking, so this quote is: freedom consists in converting the state from an organ superimposed upon society into one completely subordinate to it. So I'm going to say this idea is the kind of, this captures the idea of what is meant by converting a capitalist republic to a social republic. So one of the main writings in Marx about the social republic is his commentary on the Paris Commune. I'm just going to give a very brief history and explanation here of what the Paris Commune was, but the focus of this talk here is more on the constitutional and political reforms that were enacted during the Commune rather than the history of the Commune itself. But okay, so what was the Paris Commune? So this was a incident in the Franco-Prussian War, which lasted from the 19th of July 1870 to the 28th of January 1871, and what is referred to as the Paris Commune lasted from the 18th of March to the 28th of May 1871. So in the Franco-Prussian War, the Prussians, they placed Paris under siege, and so to understand what happened in the Paris Commune, you have to know a little bit about how the armed forces of the French were organized. So there was a regular army called the National Guard. And there was a National Guard. So the National Guard was the main force in Paris. And this was separate to the main standing army, and it was mainly composed of working class people from the Parisian neighborhoods. And a lot of these people that kind of clubbed together in neighborhood associations bought their own arms to defend Paris. So at the end of the war, and with the defeat of France, so as part of the armistice deal, Prussia agreed that it would not try to control Paris. And so following on from this, the National Army attempted to regain control of Paris, and they wanted to reclaim some cannons which were stationed in Paris, which were controlled by the National Guard, so that the national government could have full control over what was happening in France. So this attempt by the regular army failed, and the National Guard took control of Paris. And these events are sometimes referred to as the first modern class, working class, the first modern working class revolution or significant rebellion. A commune, so this was where Paris was completely under its own control, lasted for 2 months before it was overcome by armed force of the national government forces. And the massacre of the communards is known as the Bloody Week. The figures of the death toll are still debated. Estimates range between the figure of 60,000 to 20,000 communards who were executed or killed in the fighting to maintain control of Paris. So like I said, I'm going to be focusing on the political and social reforms that were enacted in the commune and show how these are an example of what Marx talked about as a social republic. So there's actually three different meanings we can use to apply to the word socialist republic. So firstly, it could be a socialist economy. Or secondly, it could be a government which is controlled by the working class. Or third, it could be a constitutional form which aids in the development and maintenance of a socialist economy and workers' control of government. So Marx, when he wrote about the Paris Commune in a pamphlet called The Civil War in France, when he talks about the social republic, he's really talking about the number three. So he's talking about the kind of constitution. So he's not, there's not a claim that the Paris Commune was actually a socialist society, but it's more that it had the kind of constitution which could have led up to eventually a socialist economy and workers' control of government. Maybe an idea of what this kind of constitution could be like is the kind of Lincoln quote, you know, government for the people, by the people, of the people. And yeah, just to mention, I'm using a source here is a recent book called Citizen Marx by Bruno Leopold. So if you want to check out these ideas afterwards, this is a good book to look up. So these are some of the reforms, changes to the constitution that were enacted in the Paris Commune. So Marx wrote that instead of deciding once in 3 or 6 years which member of the ruling class was to misrepresent the people in Parliament, universal suffrage was to serve the people constituted in communes, as individual suffrage serves every other employer in the search for workmen and managers in his business. So there's kind of three key features of how political representatives were organized in the commune. This is they were mandated and delegated. They were subject to recall. And there's a rotation and short terms of office. So another feature of the Paris Commune was that the purely repressive functions of the state are eliminated, and its socially useful functions are put under popular control. So the standing army, instead of a standing army, you have a people's militia, and you have a police force which is under the control of the community and is also subject to recall and mandate and so forth. So, can you, is this It's big enough for people to see, yeah? Yeah, so this is a table from the Leopold book. So it's kind of talking. This is from how Leopold summarizes what Marx writes in the Civil War in France about what he, the features of the Paris Commune, what they were, and also maybe what aspirationally they could have been. So if I go through this, so you have the Commune Council, which is a combined executive and legislative body, and the members of the council, they're elected by universal suffrage. Note at this time it's actually just male suffrage. They're subject to recall and to short terms, so this stops the council representatives kind of acting in their own interest too much, because they're always, they're just in the role for a short time, and they can be recalled by the general public. The members of the council, instead of being paid, you know, a vast, like a factory owner's wage or something, they're paid a workman's wage, which factually, this is more aspirational, actually. The actual, factually in the Paris Commune, the members of the council were paid. Okay, if you call it a working man's wage, it's more like the kind of wage that, I don't know, a data scientist or a high-paid web developer would get, rather than someone that works in Lidl. They weren't paid like a kind of, like the kind of wage that a factory owner would get, but it was still a high wage rather than a low one. And the councils, the next feature of the commune was that the workings of the council are publicly available. So administration, so how things are administered in public, they're subordinate to the commune council. Public officials are elected, subject to recall. And so if you think back to 1871, the kind of people that were working the civil service in France at the time, these would have been, you know, highly privileged people, paid a lot higher than the normal workmen. But these high dignitaries of the state had their privileges removed, and the operations of the state was passed on to people paid lower wages. So I'm going to skip through the other bits because this will take too much time. So if we think, contrast the ideas of a social republic to those of a bourgeois or capitalist republic. So if you think, so in a bourgeois republic, so the bourgeois or the capitalist class holds political power. This doesn't mean that the politicians themselves necessarily have to be directly involved in owning or managing capitalism, or even directly at the behest of capitalists. All it means is that somehow the political politicians, they're acting on the behalf of capitalist interests. And the republic is accompanied with a capitalist economy. And the constitution of these types of republic, again, it's one that holds to maintain bourgeois control over political power, and also holds to maintain the capitalist form of the economy. So a bourgeois republic, or a, if you like, a liberal democracy, is a barrier to emancipation, since its constitution serves to preserve bourgeois rule. So we can contrast this to the kind of the social republic, where instead the constitution helps to lead to social rule, to workers' government. So for Marx, he said that the Paris Commune demonstrated that the working class cannot simply lay hold of the ready-made state machinery and wield it for its own purposes. And he says, the political instrument for their enslavement cannot serve as the political instrument of their emancipation. So lots of people mention this quote from Marx, so the working class cannot simply lay hold of the ready-made state machinery. And they try to use this as a claim that a socialist movement should abstain from parliamentary activity, should perhaps try to achieve socialism through extra parliamentary or through anti-political methods, so through a coup d'etat, through workers' councils, through a general strike or something like this. But I'm going to say this is misunderstanding what Marx meant here. He didn't mean that the working class should abstain from parliamentary activity. What he meant was that the capitalist or bourgeois republic or state should be converted into a social republic. So the structure of the state would have to be transformed from one that preserves hierarchy to one that enables its dissolution. And this transformation first entails gaining control of the state through the use of democratic structures. Okay, and just to evidence this claim, so Marx wrote the Civil War in France, which had this quote, the working class cannot simply lay hold of the ready-made state machinery, in 1871. In 1880, Marx helped write a program for a French Workers' Party. And I'll just read through the first part of this. It's interesting in two ways. One way is you can see how the people that actually wrote the Socialist Party declaration, they were definitely looking at this kind of thing when they were writing the Socialist Party declaration. But it also shows how Marx thought that it wasn't necessary to abandon parliamentary activity. So the first half of this program says, considering that the emancipation of the productive class is that of all human beings without distinction of sex or race, that the producers can be free only when they are in possession of the means of production, that there are only two forms under which the means of production can belong to them, the individual form, which has never existed in a general state and which is increasingly eliminated by industrial progress, and the collective form, the material and intellectual elements of which are constituted by the very development of capitalist society. Considering that this collective appropriation can arise from the revolutionary action of the productive class or proletariat organized in a distinct political party, that such an organization must be pursued by all the means the proletariat has at its disposal, including universal suffrage, which will thus be transformed from the instrument of deception that it has been until now into an instrument of emancipation. The French socialist workers, in adopting as their aim of their efforts the political and economic expropriation of the capitalist class and the return to community of all the means of production, have decided, as a means of organization and struggle, to enter the elections with the following immediate demands. So I'm not going to list here what the demands are, but they can, one way you can understand these demands is being a kind of outline sketch of what I described previously as a social republic. So I'm now going to move on to talking about Karl Kautsky. So I thought it might be nice to start with this little quote, which, so I think we all might be familiar of the quote, socialism or barbarism, and lots of people think that this comes from Rosa Luxemburg, but actually you have this quote here from Kautsky. So in 1891, Kautsky says, in the class struggle, as things stand today, capitalist civilization cannot continue. You must either move forward into socialism or fall back into barbarism. So who was Karl Kautsky? So Kautsky was actually the most important figure in the development and popularization of what we now call Marxism. So his journal he founded, called the Neue Zeit, so the new age or the new times, which was founded by Kautsky in 1883, was an elemental journal in the founding of Marxism as a body of thought. And Kautsky was on the editorial board of this paper until 1917. So that's 32 years, something like that. A bibliography written by Blumberg in 1960 about Kautsky says that he wrote some 1,800 works, so including books, articles, interviews, and reviews, between 1875 and 1938. So he's a very prolific writer and educator. Here I'm only going to focus on what he wrote about the Social Republic, because otherwise it's kind of too much to handle all in one bite. So in the late 1800s and early 1900s, Kautsky's pamphlet, The Class Struggle, was one of the most read Marxist texts, possibly the most read Marxist text. Another popular text at that time would have been Engels' Anti-During, which this is the text that Kautsky himself actually says inspired him to become a Marxist. This is kind of known to speakers of English. The chapter was taken out of this and published as Socialism, Utopian and Scientific. And these two texts really, Anti-During and The Class Struggle, which were foundational to the early working class Marxist movement. And I actually picked up a 1911 edition of the Socialist Standard. It's quite interesting to see what our pamphlet list was in the early years. So we have, so out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so there's 9 publications, and out of these, 3 of these are actually written by Kautsky, and yeah, the other pamphlet is Socialism, Utopian and Scientific. So pre-World War I Marxism, basically Kautsky was the leading star, and you know, was influential on the Socialist Party. There's no denying. Kautsky went on with the approval of Engels to edit from Marx's Unfinished Notebooks what can be regarded as the 4th volume of Das Kapital, which is called Theories of Surplus Value and is actually published in 3 separate volumes. His political career within the German socialist movement was marked with controversies with different elements at different times. First of all, he was involved in a conflict within the SPD, so the German Social Democratic Party. His first conflict or debate or whatever you'd like to call it was with people who were called the revisionists, who included Bernstein. And these people, they thought that socialism could actually come about through piece by piece, through gradual changes to the law. You wouldn't need a revolution because, you know, you could enter socialist deputies, change laws, and then without people realizing it, bit by bit, you would end up in socialism. Kautsky argued against this. His pamphlet, The Road to Power, is maybe one of the main places where this is listed out. And then later on, well, maybe a decade or so, just about after this, and continuing, he was involved in a conflict with left radicals, such as Rosa Luxemburg and Anton Pannekoek, or Tony Pancake, if you want to. Maybe we shouldn't do this with the names, literally translate them, but yeah. Pannekoek and Luxemburg were influenced by the events of the 1905 and 1917 Russian revolutions, and they were kind of arguing more for revolution taking the form of mass strikes, workers' councils, and they were kind of saying that socialism could kind of arise through the unplanned, spontaneous action of the working class, which would, because there's some kind of revolutionary spirit in the people, they would, if they organized through workers' councils and mass strikes, you would achieve socialism this way. So this was influential in the German Civil War, German Revolution, whatever you want to call it. But Kautsky argued against this, saying that the problem with councils is there's no kind of overarching body to manage conflicts between the different councils. He wasn't against the ideas of workers' councils per se, but it was said they would have to be incorporated within some kind of parliamentary system as well as councils. And then in the aftermath, in the following years, following the Russian coup d'etat of the Bolsheviks, Kautsky wrote against Lenin on the nature and meaning of the dictatorship of the proletariat. And he wrote very strongly on defending the necessity of democracy and majority agreement and understanding in establishing socialism. Kautsky's conflict with Lenin led him to be known as the called by Lenin Kautsky the Renegade. And there's a funny, if you read some of the bibliographies, there's some funny stories in. So Kautsky's grandson, John Kautsky, also became like an academic who wrote about socialism and these things. And in his biography of Kautsky, he says when he met people from outside of Germany, they would think that Kautsky's first name wasn't actually Karl, it was Renegade, because they'd been used to reading all the Lenin commentary on Kautsky. There's also a general story in, so most of the commentary really written about Kautsky is from a kind of Leninist perspective. There's a kind of idea that maybe he started off as a radical Marxist, and then as time progressed, he sort of drifted rightwards and became reformist. But I don't think this is actually right. I mean, what happened was Kautsky's position was fairly stable over time, but you had the kind of Luxemburg and Pannekoek appeared on the kind of radical left to him. And then you had, you know, Lenin, who was an avid student of Kautsky. But then, you know, when he realized he hadn't interpreted Kautsky's writing in the way that Kautsky meant presented himself, he had to come up with the story saying, you know, I'm not wrong, it's Kautsky's drifted to the right. So nowadays, though, Kautsky's gone from being a figure of predominance to, I would say, one of relative obscurity. And if you look at a lot of his texts now, they're out of print or weren't even translated into English or have only just recently been translated into English. But I thought as this weekend school was about Marxism, what is Marxism, we need to talk about Kautsky, really, because, yeah. So I'm just going to, because Kautsky isn't that well known, I'm just going to read some sections which I've just taken out of some of his pamphlets and articles. I'm going to explain how Kautsky's use of the terminology around the word state, how Kautsky describes this difference between a bourgeois and a socialist republic. I'm going to talk about how Kautsky was against this kind of, you know, cookshops of the future idea, how he wasn't really, he writes a lot about the social republic, but this isn't him writing about socialist society. He's talking about how you reach socialism. And I want to just show how there's definitely a strong affinity between the writings of Kautsky and Marx. So this is the first little section here. This is from the Erfurt program. And so this is the founding program of the German Social Democratic Party. And Kautsky played a role in drafting this. Engels also provided commentary. And this is just a section here. So the struggle of the working class against capitalist exploitation is necessarily a political struggle. Without political rights, the working class cannot carry on its economic struggles and develop its economic organization. It cannot bring about the transfer of the means of production into the possession of the community without first having obtained political power. So very much their program of the Social Democrats, as approved by Engels, is this idea, you know, no, we can't ignore politics, we can't ignore the state. We have to take control of state power. Okay, so this is from a 1924 pamphlet. I just thought this might be useful to put in. This is where Kautsky is talking about what is the state, what does this actually mean? He says here, in the interests of clear thinking, it is extremely important to distinguish various phenomena by different designations. But from its beginning, the state has assumed such a varied variety of forms, all of which are described by the same name, that to many people, the state has come to mean a sovereign community. When an Oriental despotism and a democratic republic, rigidly centralized France, and the same loose federation of the British Empire may all be called by the same name of state, it is really not a matter of great moment to refuse this name to the socialist community. So as a scientific designation, the word state says very little if it is not preceded by an adjective of the definitive kind of state it is. Consequently, all investigations into the nature of the state per se are more or less futile. It may equally be condemned as a devilish institution and praised to the skies as the embodiment of the highest social ideal. Thus, it is not of considerable importance to the clarity of social thought whether we invent a special name for the community of the future or call it the socialist state, to differentiate it from previous types of the state. So here, I mean, sometimes, well, probably all the time in socialist party writing, we don't really like to call the future political organization of socialism estates, because, you know, the coercive forces are under popular control. But here Kautsky is saying, well, okay, yeah, they're different things, but perhaps let's not get too hung up on words so long as we differentiate the content of them. So I think when reading Kautsky, you have to be careful that you're not getting tripped up that when he says state, he might be talking about a social republic rather than the kind of state we have now. So this is from a pamphlet that Kautsky wrote in 1905, wasn't actually published, translated into English until 2019. So it very much has this same idea. So in the Marx, as we were talking about the social republic and the bourgeois republic, this same idea is here. So thus, the same republic which forms the basis for the emancipation of the proletariat can at the same time become the basis for the class domination of the bourgeois. This is a contradiction, but one which is no stranger than the contradictory role played by the machine in capitalist society. The machine is both the indispensable precondition for the liberation of the proletariat and at the same time the means of its degradation and enslavement. The conquest of state power by the proletariat therefore does not simply mean the conquest of government ministries, which then, without further ado, administers the previous means of rule. An established state church, the bureaucracy, and the officers' courts in a socialist manner. Rather, it means the dissolution of these institutions. As long as the proletariat is not strong enough to abolish these institutions of power, then taking over individual government departments and entire governments will be to no avail. Socialist ministry can at best exist temporarily. It will be worn down in the future struggle against these institutions of power without being able to create anything permanent. So this is Kautsky's version of, you know, the working class cannot simply lay control of the state, it has to transform it. So this is a similar quote in the Labour Revolution. I'll skip forward. So this is The Dictatorship of the Proletariat is a pamphlet that Kautsky wrote against Lenin. And he was here emphasizing the importance of democracy. In this pamphlet, he says, the distinction is sometimes drawn between democracy and socialism, that is, the socialization of the means of production and of production, by saying that the latter is our goal, the object of our movement, while democracy is merely the means to this end, which occasionally might become unsuitable or even a hindrance. To be exact, however, socialism is, as such, is not our goal, which is the abolition of every kind of exploitation and oppression, be it directed against a class, party, sex, or race. We seek to achieve this object by supporting the proletarian class struggle, because the proletariat, being the undermost class, cannot free itself without abolishing all causes of exploitation and oppression, and because the industrial proletariat of all the oppressed and exploited classes is the one which constantly grows in strength, fighting capacity, and inclination to carry on the struggle, its ultimate victory being inevitable. Therefore, day to day, every general opponent of exploitation and oppression must take part in the class struggle, whatever class he may come from. So both, I'm going to skip to the end, both means to the same end. The distinction between them must be sought elsewhere. Socialism as a means to the emancipation of the proletariat without democracy is unthinkable. So let's just talk here about the Socialist Party Declaration of Principles. So we have here this clause, so that's as the machinery of government, including the armed forces of the nation, exists only to conserve the monopoly of the capitalist class, to conserve the monopoly by the capitalist class of the wealth taken from the workers. The working class must organize consciously and politically for the conquest of the powers of government, local and national, in order that this machinery, including these forces, may be converted from an instrument of oppression into the agent of emancipation and the overthrow of privilege, aristocratic and plutocratic. So here we have the Socialist Party version of, you cannot simply take hold of the state, you have to transform it. So I'm now going to move away from Kautsky and just give some more kind of general clarification. So I'm going to talk about the social republic and republican ideas of republicanism. So if we remember back to this quote I started, that freedom consists in converting the state from a body above society to one completely subordinate to it, we can think here. So the kind of freedom associated with republicanism, it's not about being dependent on uncontrolled social power. So I am free to the extent that I am able to control social powers rather than being a passive victim of them. And this freedom is secured by being able to equally participate in social decision making. So republicanism can also be thought of as a form of institution that protects and develops these freedoms. And the social republic shows how republican principles and socialist theory are linked. So I said at the beginning, the social republic is kind of like the only realistic socialist political practice. So what I mean by real politics is something like this nice quote here. So, if ethics could effectively regulate behavior in political communities as it does, say, amongst friends, we would not require politics. So real politics is about having to make binding decisions when there is often no agreement about what the good may be, but the solution shouldn't be worse than the problem. So politics is distinct from pure domination. So when we are talking about politics, we're talking about power, interests, and the relations between these. So how we can think of the social republic being linked to this ideas of real politics. So in the social republic, we have a way of demonstrating and establishing legitimacy. We have a way of getting control of the coercive forces. And we don't need to presume any kind of spontaneous revolutionary spirit or natural unity of interest arising, because we kind of, the institutional forms of the social republic, we can say they're prefigurative, as in a democratic means for achieving democratic ends. And people can learn how to behave in a democratic way through participating in these types of organizational forms. So to conclude, so this is from a recent paper by Michael Thompson, Kautsky and the theory of socialist republicanism. So as Kautsky correctly saw the matter, the issue of maintaining political power had to be resolved via democratic mechanisms, not only as a matter of principle, but equally as a matter of politics. To subvert modern institutions and norms of democracy was to invite the powers of reaction to crush democracy as a whole, as well as socialism. Today's socialist thinkers seem to be under the spell of an ethical conviction that lacks any sense of seriousness with respect to this matter. So I'm going to say that if you think of this idea of gaining control of the state, transforming it into ways that it is can be used, that instead of fostering hierarchy, seek to dissolve it, then we have a socialist program. And we can see this in the Socialist Party Declaration of Principles as well, where it says about transforming the state. So, yeah, that was my presentation. So thank you for listening. Thanks.
Yeah.